listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
So 268 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
This week we're going to do a little bit of a mix-up on the episode. First bit of the episode we're going to talk about a slight survival guide for the Greatest International Scavenger Hunt, which starts this coming Saturday, as from when we're recording. And then we're going to do a little bit of what we've been up to. But yes, the Greatest International Scavenger Hunt, of which we've done a bit of a podcast episode about for, I think, pretty much every year since we started doing it, or at least Paul and I have started doing it. It's happening again on Saturday, 1st of August. Registration closed last week. There was last-minute scrambling as people desperately tried to fill their teams before they either got merged with random people or other teams and various aspects of that. This all is in the light of the fact that if you remember what Gish has been like when we've described it previously or seen any posts on my Twitter after the hunt's all said and done, you know it's a pretty crazy affair with a lot of full-on interaction with the public at times. This year, however, can't quite do that.
Is there something that's got in the way?
There's just like this pandemic thing.
There's a panda?
And it's endemic, I know, right?
Endemic pandas. It makes me feel better already.
Yeah. Actually, the mascot for this year is a moose crossed with a squirrel, so...
Much to, presumably, many Supernatural fans' amusement.
Yes, I think so. Because moose and squirrel. Not Rocky and Bill Winkle. So the Greatest International Scavenger Hunt.
Mirrol?
Maybe.
Scroose?
It's Scroose. It's the Scroose, they've called it. But the Greatest International Scavenger Hunt, a.k.a. Gish.
Scavenger Hunt. Yep, sorry. That sounded a bit too close.
It's a good thing we're rated explicit, is it not, then?
Yeah, but International Scavenger Hunt would be like... I mean,
wasn't that a Stephen King miniseries? I'm sure it was.
Probably. But the Greatest International Scavenger Hunt is back. Formerly the Greatest International Scavenger Hunt the world has ever seen, Gish was, but now known shortened to Gish. So you can't register anymore, but you might see random ass people like me going around online being like, can you help me with this random ass thing? I'm hoping for no taxidermied animals this year.
To be fair, there haven't been for a couple of years now.
And I hope it remains that way.
Just keep hoping.
I mean, to be fair, I know where to get some where they're not being watched very well at the moment because the places aren't back open to the public, but that is neither here nor there.
What? What?
Exactly. The pandemic's good for some things. Also, the rules for Gish
say... Not for the animals, though.
No. The rules for Gish do say, don't commit any acts that might be illegal in your country. So theft would be one of those. And breaking into, premises would also be one. But aside from the rules and regulations which go through all the sensible legal nonsense about you need to be yay age in order to compete and stuff, and if you're not, you need parental sign-off, blah, blah, there is the Gish Commandments, and the commandments change every year. Before we started recording, Retroid explained rather over a note on facial hair. What's the note on facial hair this year? Facial hair, yes. God. To reduce wind resistance and drag, all beards must feature an aerodynamic spoiler or air dam. Commandment 48 for 2020.
How many of us have beards?
Well, you've got...
It's kind of a goatee.
I can't remember if my middle brother's got one going on at the moment or not. He did have a shave recently. He's also on our team.
You're not evil, are you, Paul?
Me?
I mean,
yeah. Goatee.
Am I evil, Emily? Only to that. You.
Only yeah. to me. So, yes. So, the commandments every year change a bit, but some of them are actually things that stay in. Like, for instance, you're not, unless a task, because the whole hunt is based on tasks rather than necessarily finding things, you shouldn't actually share anything from the hunt whilst it's on. Like, you have to wait till after. So that's a thing. That's a hard and fast rule. Like, don't share any of your posts unless a task tells you to.
Because otherwise, you know, gish friends in other teams may go, yoink!
And will report you and stuff. And basically, your item will be disqualified. So, especially if it's a high points item, because each item is a task, and each task is worth X amount of points. And some are worth more than others. So if you've done something where it's, like, worth several hundred points, and you posted it online when you shouldn't have done,
you could be risking quite a bit.
Yep. And keep in mind that they do subjective rewarding of extra points, depending on how well you've executed the task. So, yeah. But speaking of taxidermied animals, apparently Commandment 44 this year is no taxidermy without representation. So if we do end up with a taxidermied animal in our midst, we will have to ensure it has the ability to vote, I should think, at that point. I'm not sure how we ensure, you know, a taxidermied animal can vote.
It could be artistic representation.
But also, like, you know, electoral representation. I have a feeling we might be breaking some laws there, so we probably would have to be careful anyway. One of the biggest survival things, aside from don't share stuff before the end of the hunt, unless told otherwise to in the task, is that you shouldn't outsource items to other teams and people, really. Like, primarily it should be the team that completes items.
Presumably that also means that if, say for example, you have a musical task and you turn around to your friend and go, oh, could you do this task for me?
You're not really meant to.
No, because they're not part of the team. Unless they are part of the team, in which case, you know.
So,
I'm just reading here, 24A, pleasure. Pleasure is permitted 3 times a day, except on Tuesdays when the standard guidelines apply.
We don't know what the standard guidelines are. But the outsourcing thing is interesting. So basically you can outsource a little bit, but you can't take the piss. So if you happen to have someone who's in the right place at the right time, like John O'Grapes on a Tuesday, and you need to take a picture there, fine. Let them add it and get them to give you the photo to submit. But if you do that for every single task where, you know, and it wasn't people registered as part of the team, because keep in mind, there's every year without fail, there will be a team item where you have to somehow get a team picture sorted. Which this year obviously will be extra hard because everyone's all over the place.
Well, I mean, saying that, I mean, everyone's usually all over the place anyway.
Oh, yeah, our team is a bit unusual previously because a lot of us have been based in Cornwall, at least we were last year.
But, I mean, previously we've had stuff like all being photoshopped to look like we're in letterboxes.
Last year was Pokemon cards.
Yeah, Pokemon cards for last year. So each person or each member of the team had to be pretty much a Pokemon card.
That was some fun, that was. Yeah, but that.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I did that one. Yeah. Because, you know.
I liked what you did with that. The details were very nice.
Thank you. What else have we got here? What is it underneath?
Interpretation is something we should really talk about in a minute. Yeah.
It's that hygiene one.
All players must floss their toes daily throughout the hunt. Be careful what you use for that. One of the biggest issues is interpretation. So,
it's So does that include dance?
There are interpretive dance routines might be an issue. But the issue is more you need to take what tasks ask quite literally.
Yeah, as literally as possible.
Rather than trying to interpret what is desired, because it could disqualify you. So if they want you to rock up outside Boris Johnson's house with a trombone, video it whilst you play some merry tune, you need to literally go and do that. They don't want you to do a Photoshop image or some digital painting or something.
Or basically you playing a trombone in front of a screen that just has Boris Johnson, you know.
Yeah. You need to rock up outside his house and do that. If a task says that you need to paint a canvas with your body.
Was it last year?
It was last year. I did that. That was fun and messy.
That was out in the front garden.
I wore a bikini.
Well, yeah, I mean, that would have got you arrested if you hadn't. Don't matter about the paint.
I now have a painting bikini. A bikini to wear was painting.
I mean, to be fair, getting
my eyebrow is just continuing to raise.
Getting paint off skin is probably easier than getting paint off clothes.
Only if you cover yourself in Vaseline beforehand.
Did you?
Yes.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
That's why it was so easy. So if you have to, that's a tip. If you have to paint anything using your body, please cover yourself in Vaseline beforehand. Or else you might end up that colour for quite some time.
See, things I did not expect to hear.
This is all from tonight. Experience.
Yeah, because this is your fifth unofficial hunt. This is my fifth official hunt. You weren't registered the first year that we did it.
No, you roped me in for a couple of...
Yeah.
For like only two or three things maybe. And then the next year you got me to kind of be...
on the team properly.
On the team properly. And then we've kind of snowballed from there until, like, I was at the year before last when we're pretty much taking over
the team that we were on. And the team is lovely. They were friends through Supernatural fandom and stuff. But, like, there were five of us from Cornwall and it was seeming like we were taking over things a bit. So we're like, we'll go form our own team. And so this is our second year with our own team.
Yeah. And this is when people go... Actually, no, I don't fancy doing it anymore. It's like, no!
To be fair, everyone's had a trouble this year recruiting because of the pandemic.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it's not just a case of money or, you know, whatnot. It's also kind of time and, you know, kind of just mental space to be able to kind of do something like this. This is quite full on, really.
Yeah. We are a full fun team, though.
Yes.
And one of our aims is to get into the annual coffee table book, which you might not be aware of. And the annual coffee table book has entries from the hunt as voted on by other hunt participants. This happens through a process known as HARSH. I can't remember what it stands for, but it's HARSH in all capital letters. Another commandment we need to remember. So commandment number 9, normalcy. I'm going to quote this. We abhor it. For the week of the hunt, you must reject all normalcy. Be weird, odd, different. Try on a whole new you so outrageous your friends, family, and the public don't even recognise you. This will pay off for you in the hunt and in life. No, some of you may already be pushing the boundaries of weird and abnormal within society. Good work. Now kick it to 11. So, yeah, that's a good one. So, like, you're not meant to... A lot of the tasks will probably push you out of your comfort zone a bit. And if you're cool with that, then roll with it. If not, see if you can get some help from the rest of your team in terms of like giving you the confidence to do it if you're interested in doing the task.
Or hand it over to another team member if you just feel like you cannot do it.
I can't see it necessarily in the... Oh, wait, no, there is... I think there's a reference to it. Is there a reference to it? I'm looking through all the 62 commandments. There is an important thing to remember, which is that you should communicate regularly with your team through whichever means the team's chosen is the main forms of communication, whether that's the app or you've set up a WhatsApp group or a Facebook group or like a Discord channel or something. Like, make sure that you talk to each other, and you can pick through the website and the app like what tasks you want to personally be responsible for completing.
Yeah, so you can assign them to yourself.
But don't hog everything. Like,
I mean, you can't do more than about 5 at a time for yourself anyway, but just when you're going to...
I think they got rid of the limit.
Oh, did they?
I think last year it felt like they got rid of the limit.
I'm pretty sure they still have the limit on.
But still, don't take on more than you think you can sensibly do. I mean, it depends if you're on a competitive team. Like, if you're on a competitive team, they'll have, like, organisation and stuff usually where it's, like...
spreadsheets and...
And trying to get... and making sure everyone's got X number of tasks and deadlines to complete them and stuff. Because the hunt... I mean, the hunt ends on a Saturday. But it ends kind of, like, very early Sunday morning, technically, for people in the UK and Europe.
Although we usually kind of call it a night on the Saturday and go out for like a meal to celebrate all that.
Not going to quite be able to do that this year.
No, that's true. I suppose we could always get takeaway.
Yeah, I mean, we've got like a bubble with like my parents, so we can hang out with my brothers who are on the team this year. But communicate with your team. Check in with your team. If you're not sure about like the quality of what you've put together, because keep in mind that while completing a task and just showing evidence of having completed it will get you the bare minimum points. If you do decent photography of it or the quality of the task is quite well done, you can get more points. And more points means...
prizes. Like, no, wait, sorry.
Well, it means points off at the Gish Swag Shop, because there's a swag shop.
A swag shop?
Yes. If you're a competitive team, it means points towards the grand prize. And the team with the most points can win a once-in-a-lifetime experience with the one, the only, Misha Collins, star of Supernatural, and I believe TSA videos, but I might be mistaken. He's certainly been on one public service-y video. It might have been a tax one. Unsure.
But, yeah, the likelihood of you winning that, considering some of the teams out there... they are so, like, you must do, you know, this many tasks, you must do it like this, and being basically over the top, and obviously not for fun.
Yeah. And tend to have lots of celebrity and, public figure kind of connections and stuff. They're well-networked. Very well-networked. But the thing to remember about the sort of points thing is that also you're looking at something like 8,000 to 9,000 points for a team probably to be at that winning level. And that's spread across completing usually over 200 items from the hunt list.
Yeah, I think it's kind of grown these past couple of years to about 200, just under 230, I'd say.
Yeah, so like it doesn't start off that long. During the course of the hunt, usually at the start of the hunt, it's maybe about 150 to 180, and then every day new items get added, some get taken away. The ones that get taken away are usually due to safety or legal fears. Or
in the case of, I think it was last year, when one of the tasks was to Photoshop like Kirk and crew of the original Star Trek Enterprise into a Western, being like, tweet it at William Shatner to be like, this is how we kind of, rolled in the truly old days, or something like that.
Did he complain about being tweeted at?
Yes, because quite frankly, that is nigh on like targeted kind of.
I mean, to fair,
even though it's not bad in the sense that it's, you know.
But then the year before last, they were trying to get people to send lots of postcards to him, so
yeah.
Tweet seems like a reasonable
difference
there.
Yeah, and they're all kind of, you know, in nice jest. It's not like a, you know, go, you know, bug, you know, what's his name now? William Shatner. And, I don't know, swear at him or something like that. It's, it's always, you know, it's like, you know, tongue-in-cheek type thing.
I would swear at William Shatner for free.
A lot of people would.
He is a bellend, but...
Oh, you know how I was trying to say, like, if you're not sure about things, here's commandment number 8, shame. It doesn't exist during the hunt. If you have any leftover shame tucked away, get rid of it now. Throw it in your compost bin or recycle it into something more useful like a pogo stick or moon shoes. If you must hang on to it, stick it somewhere so clever you'll forget where you put it. We recommend throwing it into the laundry so it can end up in the dark and mysterious place where all socks go.
Lost socks go.
Are you sure it's not all? Because sometimes when I like do my washing, and I swear...
What, your socks don't come out at
all? It feels like it.
But maybe you're not sticking them in.
Maybe they're so smelly they wander off beforehand.
See, I mean, usually they kind of... My socks aren't too bad with kind of wandering around. You know, that they generally tend to stay together. Even if, like, one's hidden underneath, like when you stick the, you know, the clean laundry on your bed in order to kind of tidy it up and whatnot. You know, one of the socks is usually underneath, like, you know, it's like a pair of pants or your trousers or whatever. So yeah, I don't usually have that issue.
Okay, it's just me.
Yeah, just you. You're weird. Maybe I'm weird. My socks don't want to leave me.
Dang.
What do you mean, dang?
Dang.
You want to get rid of my socks?
No.
Let's talk about socks, baby.
But I'm just trying to think other important things to remember. Don't plagiarise is kind of like an important one. Kale's okay this year. The status of kale has varied over the years.
Yeah, I assure you, in this house, it has not.
And aside from the commandments, which are all fun and everything, there's like a whole load of tasks that tend to crop up every year. Like if you're newbie, you're not, you wouldn't be aware of this, but like there's usually a task involving Misha Collins and the Queen. There's usually a task involving stormtroopers. There's usually a task involving women's sanitary products. Also, not women's sanitary products, just sanitary products, really. There's usually a task towards the end, especially where they try to get each team to fundraise money towards charitable cause. Was it last year that we were clearing landmines for people in Vietnam? Last year was a landmine clearance, dealing with landmines left over from the Vietnam War.
And I think, yeah, because that caused you to feel like quite emotional when watching that Spike Lee film.
Oh, yeah. It's on Netflix. It's the five-something. Oh, my brain. See, we're so well prepared for Gish. Our brains are melting out our ears already. I'm literally just checking because it's worth watching if you haven't seen it. The Five Bloods, Spike. That's worth a watch. What other tasks tend to crop up? Oh, they don't want people to buy plastic this year to make any of the tasks happen and stuff. Like, if you have to use plastic in a task, reduce, reuse, recycle, upcycle or something. So we're currently holding on to recycling from the last couple of weeks. To make sure we have materials necessary to ensure this. Another thing is just to hold on to your recycling. Like, I don't know when you're going to listen to this, and it might be a bit late, but every bit of rubbish you create, consider, could this be useful for a task? And if you have pets, consider trying to collect some of their hair and storing it to one side, because there will probably be a task involving making art from pet hair.
I joke that we should... get the hair from your brothers.
I know, but they had all their pandemic hair shorn off the other week, but no, we weren't there, unfortunately, to kind of make sure it got bagged up for use in Gish. Unfortunately.
Because that wouldn't have seemed weird.
You got to be ready for this thing, man.
Oh. Be at the window saying, no, can we have the hair? Can we have the hair, please?
And then another task that's appeared a couple of times in the last few years, has appeared over the last few years each hunt, is there's been a tattoo task to go and get a tattoo of a specific thing or a thing related to a thing. So I've mentally prepared, because I'm captain for our team, I've mentally prepared people for the fact that that might be something that will appear on the list. But generally all the tasks fall under either crafty, creative, or charitable, or sometimes crafty, charitable, or what did I say? Three C's. It's crafty, crazy, or charitable. Crafty, crazy, or charitable. Tasks usually fall into one of those, or all three of them, or two of them. So yeah, and if you are taking part in the hunt this year and you tried using the hunt app and you haven't updated it yet to update it, because the latest update fixed a whole load of bugs because it has not been working properly since forever, since the last hunt, basically.
Bugs being like, you basically go to look at your team page and it logs you out.
Yeah. And if you're worried about submissions working on the website and stuff, make sure you're using a Chromium browser. It gets a little bit funky about Firefox, which frustrates me greatly. Very greatly. But yeah.
Firefox, meh.
So up to over 200 items over the course of the hunt. Items will be updated daily, as we've said. Some will be removed due to either safety or legal fears. New ones will be added. They will release updates on the blog and app every day saying what's been updated, what's been taken off and what's been added. If you complete a task before and can submit it before it's been taken off the list, you'll still qualify for points for that item. But otherwise, if you then try to do it afterwards, you won't be able to submit anyway because it won't be there available to submit. So yeah. Retro, do you have any questions for us before we move away from
what?
Yeah. That's a sensible response. We're going to leave a link in the episode description that shows you a site with a list of past hunts. They haven't got 2019's, but they do have every other hunt's list, including the mini hunts that have happened this year. So they've had two mini hunts, one in April, one in May, where they've tried to kind of figure out how to do everything with a lack of everything everyone normally has in the middle of August. So, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of, because it's quite mentally exhausting in certain respects, gish. Because you kind of start off being like, all excitement, like, oh, yes, I can do that. And then you kind of get to like day two or three when you've kind of done the easy ones and you're left with kind of a daunting, task list that you're like, I'm not sure I can do any of these anymore. And you kind of wish it was over because it's so stressful and whatnot. And then, like, I don't know, maybe like halfway through you just kind of naturally kind of pipe up a bit and just be like, oh, actually, especially after talking to your team as well, you're like, oh, yeah, actually, I can do this, I can do that, I can borrow that. And yeah, so it does take quite a lot of mental concentration, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. But I think even if you're playing for competitively, if you're playing for fun, like actually at the end of the day, it should be fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you're not enjoying yourself in either level of intensity that you're playing at, you need to talk to the rest of your team. So, with that out of the way, obviously, if you have any questions about Gish and what it's like, tweet us at Nerds Podcast. Somebody will get back to you. Team Swords and Lakes.
My main one would be why?
Mostly fun.
It's something different.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, normally people in the middle of August go on holiday to somewhere like Spain and sun themselves on a beach, but apparently that's incredibly difficult to do this year.
There's something about dying.
But yeah, we do this instead of having like a regular summer holiday.
I mean, you kind of need sometimes to basically just do random stuff.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of... There's something about like having like a task list of, you know, kind of stuff that you know is either going to be, you know, kind of quite wacky and whatnot, or actually kind of embarrassing.
Mm.
But at least this way you can turn around and say, oh, it's for Gish. Or what's Gish? Oh, well, it's, you know, such and such. And then you can say that it's for a good cause and or causes.
Yeah, I mean, the registration fees alone. We've raised 1 million meals for disadvantaged children who've been affected by COVID-19 in several countries.
Mm.
So, like, that's just an evidence of the charitable side, you know.
Which is excellent, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, it's really, really amazing what can happen because of the hunt.
Mm. And it's just kind of nice to be silly. I mean, I think the first year that we was that before, when we decided to make our own team, or was that the year before?
Last year we made our own team.
Yeah. So I think it was the year before where we ended up basically taking a photo of the local team members.
Yeah.
In front of like a sunset with like goats and whatnot.
Oh, it was the year before last. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is just kind of really bizarre, but somehow just quite fun.
Yeah. Okay. With that out of the way, everybody gets to pick one thing they've been up to.
Why do I feel victimized already?
I don't know, Metroid. I would at least like you to describe the parts that you got last week, which were like a real, real mix.
A big pile, big box. Yeah, a big box of electronics, which cost 50 euros to ship from Italy.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah. Included in the box were 15 arcade boards. 15 more arcade boards. I seem to have developed a problem. According to anyone who's seen how many I've got.
Do you need intervention? Do we need to do a socially distanced intervention and go all the way up to a Carlisle?
Well, you can buy some more and send them up.
That doesn't sound like an intervention, right? That's not an intervention. That's the opposite of an intervention. That's enablement.
Yeah, yeah, that's the one I like. But yeah, there's an Italian seller who on eBay who's been they've clearly been helping to you know, clear out an old amusement arcade or, you know, someone's, you know, like you know, warehouse. So there's just been, you know, they've been selling some games that, you know, they know what they are for more cash, and otherwise there's the boards that I bought, which were, I don't know what they are. Take your look with them. So I decided to, you know, buy quite a few, and I had a little word with the, you know, the seller beforehand. Basically, you know, can you combine the postage on all of these? Because I think the base postage on all of them was something like 39 euros each, which would be very bad. But yeah, I had a bit of a, you know, a word, and he said, yeah, I will combine them, and if it's below, like, you know, about 10 kilograms, then it will be, you know, like 40 euros or something like that. as it turned out, oh, look, there's mine. I bought slightly more than that. And, yeah, it was 50 euros, but that's still a good deal.
We have to take your word for this, that it's a good deal.
Well, there have been other people who have been selling some of the games. I know I have, because I have been identifying them, you know, slowly, which I'll, you know, explain. But, you know, there's been people saying, oh, yeah, this is a bootleg, because, you know, I've gone into bootlegs before, but it's like, yeah, basically because the arcade industry was quite pricey and weren't necessarily that bothered about selling to, you know, some of the holiday destinations in Europe, there would be companies that would sort of take the initiative and more or less copy these games. So, yeah. Arcade games, if you played them in Spain or Italy or even in some places in the UK and various other destinations, there's no guarantee that if you've walked up to a cabinet and it's a generic looking cabinet and you played Robocop or Strider, Street Fighter, all that kind of thing. Yeah, there's actually a good chance that you were playing a pirated board.
Wow.
So, yeah, as an example, as it turns out, I have two boards which are very definitely hacked versions of Street Fighter II Championship Edition.
Definitely and hacked.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're non-official because what you have to do with these is, you have the ROMs that are on the board. Because even with legitimate games, frequently what would happen is the run of these boards wasn't that big, depending. So what they do is they would buy EPROMs, which are, electronically erasable. These are, the more up-to-date ones. Electronically erasable, programmable read-only memory. So you would, burn the data onto those, think of them as, very old physical SD cards, and they would be peppered around the board with the data that was, the game code, sound samples, graphics, all of that. They would be peppered around the board and usually on EPROMs. Unfortunately, some of the older EPROMs are sensitive to UV light. They have little windows on, on the top of, and, they're very pretty. You get some, nice rainbows on them. but that means, depending on how they're stored, and even, so I've heard sometimes, even if they're just stored in a dark place, you will get what's known as bit rot. Where it will just start to degrade. Things will, corrupt. It's like on, any, especially magnetic media.
Yeah.
Or even as we, we've heard about on some DVDs and CDs, they can get disc rot, where the, the pits will start getting, separated by, fungus or just, the adhesive breaking down. But yeah, basically the ROMs can go bad on them, and especially if it's the program ROM, then the board won't run, and it doesn't matter what you do with it. You will just get a black, blank screen, or you'll get, everything running corrupted, and you won't be able to tell what the hell it is. So most of these boards that I've got, well, actually all of them, apart from one, of the 15 I got, one will actually run, and it's a table tennis game from 1994. All the other ones, the EPROMs are usually socketed because, this was a known issue. So you could, reflash the ROMs chips to get rid of this, this problem if you knew what you were doing. And that's what I'm going to have to do. So these chips were socketed. And most boards, not all, that's another issue. So I've been prizing these ROM chips out, putting them in a chip reader, which I bought from AliExpress, and then I've been reading the data on those, saving them out as files on my computer, and either going through them with a text reader looking for identifiable text, or throwing them at, there are ROM identification services, like there's the Arcade Restoration Workshop, which is a good website. And if you dump ROMs from your boards, you can then upload the files to the server, and they say they do not conserve the data. You know, that as soon as they're identified by checksums and search strings and anything like that, they are they're gone. So nothing is kept on their end for copyright things. It's just for if you're trying to fix things, this is where you can get them identified. There's one or two boards I've tried where no ROM is identifiable. So, BitRot has got to those. I'm going to have to work out what they are by, other means. Several other ones, I have managed to successfully, dump these ROMs. So I've got, partial, because they all have, one or two chips which are bad. As an example... the one I was dumping today, which made me slightly late for this, was a dual layer board, which was two boards stacked together, joined by a cable. And I had no idea what it was. It had 21 chips to dump.
Jeez.
Every single one I had to lever out carefully, so I didn't bend any of the pins.
Mm.
Pop them in the reader, read the label on it, because there are different manufacturers. So in AMD, NEC, Texas Instruments, there are there's quite a few. So you have to identify the make, but then you have to identify the capacity of the the chip, so it reads it right, and then hope that it's actually readable. So I did that, and I had to do this for 21 bloody chips on this board. And it turned out that it's a bootleg version of the RoboCop arcade game from 1988. And it's just, I remember playing that game in the arcade. It was good. It was coincidentally kind of, I think it was based on the home computer version that came out in 1987. So
it wasn't made originally for arcade.
It is kind of based on it. I think Ocean Software, who did the the game, they had a Christmas smash hit with it, and I think there was some kind of talk about getting it into an arcade. It was Data East who originally published the the arcade game, but yeah. I've identified it. I've got about 3 bad ROMs, which isn't bad from out of 21. But this is an example of a bootleg which isn't just a pirated version of the board. It's a little bit weird in that it's got different music. It's got music from a different game.
What?
And I don't know why. The Street Fighter 2 hacks I've got, so far as I know, I've got 2 different ones, and there were some, because there was a very weird thing going on with Street Fighter 2. Street Fighter 2 was big in the arcades, and it was big on home consoles and such. What happened with that was, it's a bit like happened years earlier with Pac-Man, where the game would come out, and people would want to, get in on the action. So they'd be, if you're paying Capcom $400 for this board, or, however much it costs as an operator, you can get one from us for $100. And if they said, well, we've already got one, why would we be wanting to, have another one if it's exactly the same, game? And they'll say, well, okay, on ours, all the characters are faster. And, okay, yeah, I might buy one. And then it'll be, why would I buy one, from you again?
Yeah.
Well, on this version, all the characters can do fireballs. Okay, that, you know, that's a bit weird. You know, and then it would be, you know, why do I buy a new version? And you say, you can play an unplayable character. Or, you know, everyone can do special moves that, you know, go much further up the screen. And, or, you know, we've ramped up the difficulty so it's hard to see, you'll get more credits. And they're truly weird, considering I was never into Super, in a Street Fighter 2 or, you know, any of its variants, you know, because there was Street Fighter 2, there was Championship Edition, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. One of the most popular ones you can look up in the arcades was Street Fighter 2 Rainbow Edition. And I think there were various things in that, like they made it easier to pull off certain special moves, and there were different, you know, color variations. Quite a lot of the really weird stuff that ended up creeping into, you know, the Street Fighter 2 series with all its variations. The variations that Capcom produced for it were partly changing things to stop, you know, all these bootleggers from copying it, and partly because they would see what some bootlegger has hacked into the game, and they thought, oh, hang on, that's actually a good idea, we'll use that. It's like the... With mentioning Pac-Man, the original Pac-Man only has one maze. So people would get really used to playing it. And a big incentive would be some of the bootleggers who would come along and say, hey, not only, you know, does our board cost less, but it's got a different maze, or it's got three different mazes, or everything runs a lot faster. Because there was a whole competitive thing about playing Pac-Man. I know it sounds weird, but... where obviously, you know, each time you complete a level, you will go slightly faster. The next one will move slightly faster, and the ghosts will move slightly faster. There's a really popular thing which you could do on the official boards as well. You could add just timer chips that would make all the movement go much faster. So you would, you know, effectively start on, you know, level 64. Something like that. So, you know, the very first moment that you put a credit in and you press start, everything will be moving like the clappers. And a lot of competitive players of Pac-Man really liked that, because they thought, you know, the whole ramping up of the difficulty was really boring because they had played those bits, you know, so many times before. So if you could just go, you know, dive straight into the deep end where things were harder, then, you know, they loved that. And then, you know, Namco, who did Pac-Man, would, oh, hang on, someone's done new mazes. Let's do Miss Pac-Man that, you know, not only had different mazes, but it would change, you know, every few screens. And then, you know, all that fed in. So it's kind of, you know, the industry would feed on the bootleggers, and the bootleggers would obviously feed on the industry. But yeah, it all gets very weird. So there you go. I've identified about three or four of the, you know, the 15 boards so far, but it's laborious work, and there's one or two that I've got where none of the ROMs seem to conform to anything. So it's just kind of trying to narrow it down, because I can see, you know, the sound chip that's on the board, I can see the processor that's on the board, I can see how much RAM, I can see if there's, you know, any peculiar chips on there, and I can see the manufacture date on, you know, top of some of the chips. So I can say, well, you know, what games had like two Z80 CPUs and, you know, a sound chip from Toshiba. And they were made in that, you know, 1988 or earlier. And it's that kind of process of elimination.
Wow.
I find it fun, but then that's me.
Am I right thinking that one of the boards that you came through that order was actually from a gambling machine of some sort?
Yes, that was actually an earlier order. I am, you know, betraying how much of a problem I have there. And yeah, it's from an earlier order. It's an Italian language fruit machine game, but it's entirely on a small, you know, arcade board.
Makes sense.
And I've been using that as a test.
Okay.
You can get converters now, so you can run these, you know, older bits of hardware on VGA monitors.
Okay.
And they, you know, they can be quite handy. And I got some of those, and I've been, because as an example, right up to, you know, from the very start, I got an arcade cabinet about 10, 15 years ago. And it was just because I, you know, I've told the story before, so I'll keep it short. I just happened to walk into the Seaside Arcade in Silloth, and they were selling their arcade cabinets for 50 quid each and £10 per game.
That's crazy.
So, yeah. I got two games, one of which was Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles, and that's recently been going for about £300 on eBay. Jeez. So if I had the, you know, the choice between, should I use Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, same game, but I've got the UK version because stupid anti-ninja thing. You know, should I use that, knowing that if anything goes wrong with it, it will cost me a small bloody fortune? Or should I use a shitty fruit machine bot that I truly do not give two craps about?
Mm.
So, yeah, I've had that hooked up, and I finally got the stuff working on my LCD monitor.
Nice.
So, yeah. We've also watched Harley Quinn Season 1.
We still need to finish watching it. Is it still up on All 4 at the moment?
I don't know, because we were recording it via, on the Virgin box we've got.
Mm.
But yeah, quite enjoyed it. So I finished the first season. I think that's all that's on in the UK, isn't it?
Yeah.
They haven't got the second, but I think the second is finished in the US.
Might be.
Yeah, I don't know. I've not checked, but yeah. It's good. We liked it.
Good. I was really enjoying the first few episodes that we watched.
Mm.
But we kind of lost track of it whilst trying to do stuff for D&D and Animal Crossing and knitting.
Well, we had just finished watching Into the Night on Netflix, which is a French series. I think it's a Netflix original, where on the first episode there's a plane that's going to be taking off with various passengers, and it's in its early boarding, so there aren't that many on board, and this Italian soldier bursts on and with a gun and tells them to take off because otherwise they will all die, which they take as a direct threat from him, but it turns out it's because the sun has gone wacky and it is irradiating people around the planet.
Okay.
So they have to keep flying westwards to escape the rising sun, because if they get anywhere near the sun, then they will die because of radiation.
What's this series called again?
Into the Night.
Okay.
So, yeah, we just finished that, and he's got, what else is there to watch? Bollocks. We've watched everything. We have just consumed all this consumable media.
Oh, well, I finally started rewatching. I say rewatching because I've never fully watched all of it. Mr. Robot.
Yeah.
So, I'm finally up to in partway through season 2 where I stopped the last time. I've had some writing to do this past week, so I haven't got back to it. But once I've finished, basically in between gish tasks next week, I can see that I will be watching some Mr. Robot.
It is well worth sticking with through the whole thing.
There are elements that I definitely hadn't quite caught when I'd watched the first season last time, and stuff definitely now makes a lot more sense. But again, I was certainly, anytime there's like anyone typing into like a freaking terminal or something, like, I'm just like going, oh, that looks like it's a real bit of command. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Not that I know tons about doing stuff in terminal, but
it's definitely a step up seeing an operating system which you know exists, because you might have seen it around, and them typing in commands which do actually, you know, make some sense in context.
Yeah.
Instead of just a screen of text and then, you know, just mash the keyboard and a 3D pyramid pops up on the screen and animates.
Yeah, I still don't quite understand how the 80s, 90s kind of audio-visual interpretations of the cyber existence involved weird-ass graphics rather than just lines of code. Is it just because they desperately wanted to have something visual to show rather than lots of dramatic acting?
I think the whole idea was lines of text are boring.
I think it's also kind of telling that obviously nowadays we have more, like say with Mr. Robot, where we have like, you know, command line type stuff and whatnot. Back then, the gap between normal viewer and geek was so wide that they could quite happily ignore the geek, ignore the complaints of the geek, and basically just cater to, you know, the
everyday.
Yeah, everyday Joe.
Yeah. You say, what is a computer? I don't know. Then it doesn't matter what we show on the screen, does it? Hooray!
But now, because geek culture has got to the point where it is kind of more mainstream, you know, they kind of, in a way, have to, you know, kind of have it more realistic.
That's true. But yes, so I've been watching Mr. Robot knitting. My pandemic blanket is now pretty much down to my feet. But like, it's only, so it's basically covering my lap. Kind of need it to cover my torso as well before I'll be done. So I'm just over halfway done through with this thing. That I'm so glad the temperature's dropped a bit, because when you're knitting a blanket and it's one single piece rather than patches, it gets a little bit warm, you know? So
what have the temperatures been down there?
It's been pretty cool for summer, technically. Like, we've been hovering around 19 degrees C a lot, and I feel really British on a podcast talking about the weather. But, yeah, we've had a couple of days where we've gone maybe up to, like, 22 or something, but I would say, compared to the last few summers, this has actually been quite a cool summer.
Yeah. I'm just well aware that...
Sorry. I was going to say, keep on forgetting that's meant to be like the height of, or you know, pretty much like middle summer now. It kind of feels like it should be kind of trailing off into the autumn.
Yeah. You've still got all this to get through.
I know.
Yeah, it still feels weird like that. But up here, we've been getting high teens. That's about it. It's supposed to be bad on, bad in my mind on Tuesday. Not Tuesday, Friday. It's one of those where I was looking at the screen and someone was saying Tuesday. And said, no, that's not helpful. But yeah, it's 25 forecast up here on Friday. And we're far warmer than that down south.
Oh boy.
Forecasting 30-odd in London, which is just
London's
not acceptable.
Just always ridiculous, though, in the summer. Just expect to be warm, uncomfortably warm. It's the only way to be. Oh, I've just remembered something that we should do a public announcement about for the sake of people's consoles. Do you have a PSP that you haven't used in a while? Have you checked the battery recently? It may be swollen, and you might wish to remove it from your console before it destroys the case.
As was swole.
I think that it trended on Japanese Twitter like over the weekend, and somebody cross-posted it into my feed, and I saw like about it, and I was like, "Wait a minute, what's happening with our PSPs?" And yeah, they were affected by the issue that was described. So we've removed the batteries.
Yeah, they're LiPo batteries, so it's kind of... Yeah. I've got a PSP Go.
Yeah.
Which is the mini slidey version. Which, yeah, it doesn't have an optical drive, but that's fine, as far as I'm concerned, because we have a full-size original PSP as well.
Yeah.
but I wanted it mostly for emulation. And yeah, that's got a non-removable battery.
Ooh.
So well done, Sony. I'll be keeping an eye on that.
Yeah, so check your PSPs, guys, if you haven't checked them in a while. You're the most at risk at summoning a cat, though.
Yeah, amazing. I am amazed that she hasn't come in because she has been bothering me the last few days. She got a bite.
Oh.
A cat bite, which got infected, so she was a little bit poorly last week.
Aww.
So, yeah, got her to the vets and 70 quid bill. But antibiotics, and now she's a pain in the ass again. So,
obviously,
it's all good. Yeah, it worked.
Yeah. Paul, what you been up to? Like,
What have I been up to? So last week I binge watched a repeat of the second season of Star Trek Discovery.
Did you hear today that it looks like Star Trek Discovery season 3 is coming in October?
Yes. Yes, I heard.
Yeah.
But I'm still pissed off that we don't have a UK release date or even like platform for it at the moment of Star Trek Lower Decks.
Can you explain to the dear listeners what Star Trek Lower Decks is?
It's basically an animated comedy take on Star Trek set after Nemesis, or Star Trek Nemesis. And it basically, if anybody's ever seen the Next Generation episode Lower Decks, they'll kind of understand it's basically about a group of four friends lower down in the rankings, so like ensign and whatnot, and then them kind of dealing with just kind of like the everyday kind of antics while like around them there is, you know, the captain that goes on these brilliant missions,
yeah,
and you know the senior officers that have, so yeah, and it's basically just focusing on, you know, those lower ensigns and what they get to.
It's basically like while everyone else is Starfleeting, they're the ones who have, you know, if something's blown up in a fight, or you know if the food replicators are, you know, broken, or something is
spilled, there's a triple infestation.
Yeah, they're the ones who have to deal with it. So they're the ones that you'll always see in the background with the, you know, get this repaired. Helping someone else and or just not even, yeah, not even registering.
Is there any, but going back to the fact that you rewatched Discovery season 2,
yeah,
is there anything of note from having a rewatch of it?
I think it definitely feels like it makes more sense in my head having a rewatch, because I think at the first time watching us when it kind of came to, can I do spoilers here?
Spoilers.
So, when it comes to the Red Angel, I think the first time through I was a little bit confused as to whether it was Burnham's mum, but then it was also Burnham, and it's like the, you know, kind of getting confused about, you know, the fact that the Red Angel was kind of pointing to kind of places, and then then Discovery would go there, and then the Red Angel would pop up again and whatnot, and it kind of got a bit confusing. And it's like, actually, on a rewatch, knowing everything and kind of being able to kind of focus on stuff more, yeah, I do actually understand it or feel like it kind of makes sense more on the second time through.
Okay.
Which I suppose is, you know, kind of what you're after, really. Something that, you know, kind of is not the same when you rewatch it, like a second time through.
I definitely feel like the, you know, Discovery works better binge watching.
Yeah, and it still has that episodic structure.
Oh yeah,
you know, as well, which is good, and it also has the you know, overarching, you know, kind of narrative. And it really irks me that there are still people out there that are just like, no, it's terrible. It's not proper Trek.
like... catching snippets of your rewatch, yeah. I was reminded of the fact that I really like Spock, that the version of Spock that's in Discovery. It's
terrible. Especially with his beard.
It is a very nice amount of facial hair. But however, he must shave, you know, some aerodynamic, you know, nest into it if he were to compete in Gish in the year 2020. Oh, imagine a scavenger hunt in space in the future.
That would be, like... Well, I mean...
It'd be some pretty out there...
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Items and tasks to deal with.
But yeah, it's just... I really, really enjoyed Discovery Season 2, and it had plenty of humour as well. I think it's just people that kind of watched the first... Well, part of the first season and gone, nope, don't like it, put it down, and have complained about it ever since. And it's like, every Star Trek season... has always kind of been near the first season or not, also.
Although, with that, I still liked the first series, you know, season of Discovery.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. It just, so many people, it doesn't make sense. It's like, shut up and just watch the rest.
And what gets me is when people, like, see on YouTube, or at least I see, on YouTube recommendations about, you know, people being like, oh, you know, Discovery cancelled, ooh, you know, oh, this is the death of Trek kind of thing. And it's just like, seriously, just let people who like it watch it. Why do you have to fucking complain? And why do you have to try and, you know, make it seem as though, you know, it's going off the air?
It's, you know, there wasn't as much, well, yeah, there wasn't the internet at the time. But I do remember a lot of friction in the magazines when Next Generation started up on, you know, UK TV. And, yeah, it was pretty much the same bullshit.
Yeah.
So it's just... I'll piss off.
Yeah.
Except now it's aided by clickbait algorithms. So you could monetize being a whingy little asshole.
That's pretty much what happens a lot of the time. Monetizing, you know, that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm kind of still kind of going back to that whole Lower Decks thing, and it looks very different. But that isn't a bad thing. Each Trek series has always had, you know, kind of its divergences from, you know, previous, you know, kind of canon, well, sorry, not canon, styles, and environments and whatnot. Because in the end, you're going to have, you know, it's like a Galactic Federation, and it's going to feel different from ship to ship or space station, or even time, you know, in the... history of, you know, of the Star Trek universe. It's gonna feel different. And I don't understand why people can't get that.
A lot of people are just shites. Just, yeah.
Very much. It's sorry, just, a bit of a rant there, and yeah. I mean, I'm kind of looking forward to season two of Picard as well, but I know that that's going to be a while before we get that.
Yeah, I am hoping for better pacing with that. Because I do think most of the issues that I have with it, not all, but most of the issues I had with it were pacing. It just seemed to spend half the season not really going anywhere.
But I kind of hope that, because they've kind of established that Romulans are very much different from each other. You know, you don't, because they're so 2D in, like, you know, previous Star Trek series. You know, they're basically just, you know, in essence, Romulan military uniforms, you know, the shoulder pads, their haircut. You can swap them in and out. And, you know, I like the fact that there are unique characters for the Romulans. You know, like the two ex-Tel Shiar
you know, Romulans that he has.
Yeah, I like them.
In comparison to, like, what was it? Not Enzo, the Ezio? No. Dinghy that goes with him.
I
liked him as well. I can't think of his name.
I would like to see a bit more character development. There didn't seem to be that much.
Mm. Yeah, he kind of came in and was like, you know, kind of an interesting character to start off with. But then they decided to focus on like other people and whatnot, and it's just like...
I mean, they had to pick up the you know, the lawful good ranger.
Mm. The space elf.
Yeah. That's what I thought as soon as I saw him in the very first trailer for it. It's like, space elf.
Well, I suppose, technically speaking, if you're going to kind of do that, then the Vulcans would probably be the elves and the Romulans would be drow or dark. Because they're kind of the same species, kind of, only one of them, you know, is to the dark side and, like, underground and, like, hidden and stuff. And the other...
One of them was given a load of, you know, textbooks to read, and the other one discovered those subreddits. That's my description of Vulcans and Romulans.
But I mean, I thought the characterizations were really good, you know, in Picard. Like you said, you know, pacing was an issue. But I do wonder how it's going to feel, kind of going back and watching it all, like, you know, a binge watch of it.
Mm.
You know, because you know, when I watched it, it was, you know, sort of like, you know, individual like episodes as they came.
Yeah, I don't have the patience with these things that are, you know, released weekly. I will be watching them as soon as I can, but. Especially with Picard, it would have worked a lot better if they just said, bam, here you go, here's the season.
Yeah. But then I suppose part of the issue with that is that CBS are designing it for their online service and they want to have people basically kind of continue to subscribe rather than being like, bam, it's all on our service. By the way, you have like a week's free trial or something like that. Oh, everybody's kind of gone for their week's free trial, watched all of our stuff. And I've not bothered subscribing.
I would very definitely do that. But yeah,
bit of an issue.
With it being on Netflix, everything is just there.
Mm.
You know, when I'm finished with it, it's annoying because I don't want to get spoiled because the internet. And yeah, I want new Trek, damn it. Of course I'm going to bloody watch it as soon as it's on.
I mean, I'm not...
Why wouldn't I? Are you insane? Yeah.
I mean, I'm not... I mean, obviously, Lower Decks is going to be very, very different. It's going to be far more comedic. It's animated, and it's basically going to have a very, very different feel. A lot of people turn around and say, oh, well, it's, you know, from the creator, one of the creators of Rick and Morty, so, you know, oh, it's basically just going to be like that. It's just like... It's not. It's going to be animated, and it's going to have humour, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to have the same... type of humor.
Yeah. I very definitely did get a sort of a, you know, Rick and Morty, you know, vibe from it, but not the kind of weird out there-ness.
No.
And also I saw a few people talk about what they'd seen, you know, in both the trailer and I think the opening scene has been released as a, you know, a teaser.
Yeah.
And there are, you know, there were, of course, because fandoms, you know, people pouring over every single frame of it and saying this is a reference to this and this is a reference to that. And yeah, I have to say, though, you know, they've done their homework. It's not, they're not just doing Rick and Morty B-roll.
Yeah.
With Star Trek uniforms, which, you know, it would not work. No. But yeah, it's like, okay, because I was very... Are you sure about doing this? But yeah, I've watched the trailer and I'm thinking, yeah, I think this could work. They might be onto something here.
Definitely. And I mean, I'm not entirely sure about how this, was it Star Trek Prodigies, is it? Which is meant to be like a CGI Nickelodeon kind of
series? That I'm more like, kind of what? Just,
Okay, for the much younger audience, I was like, well, I mean, I kind of get the wanting to kind of reach a different audience, but then obviously we're going to have stuff like Strange New Worlds.
Star Trek, yeah, I am looking forward to that.
Yeah, and the inevitable Section 31. One that's been rumored for absolutely ages. It's basically a good time to be a Trekkie if you're not a gatekeeping asshole Trekkie.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That. Yeah. Which I've never been. So it's yay, more Trek. Unless it's like Star Trek V. No. Less of that, please. Offer not First Contact. Which was that really shit TNG film?
Insurrection.
That was it. Oh god, that was bad.
I think that one felt like it should have been just basically a two-parter in the series.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not even sure if it should have been a two-parter, but fair. There you go.
Yeah.
Whereas Nemesis, nowhere near as bad. But that's the one that gets the rap as the one, you know, it killed off the TNG movies.
Guys. Like, you know, Guys.
Yeah.
I think we need to call it a night. Sorry. we need to, I'm trying to make, I can't make a link.
I was going to say lose consciousness.
Lose consciousness. We need to lose consciousness, but we need to disengage from the holosuite right now.
Computer end program.
Computer end program. The photos in the park with the
yes,
with the book. Yeah.
Is that the
The holodeck controls that are stuck to like some utilities thing in a park somewhere? I think in the US.
Yeah, in an LA park or San Francisco, somewhere in California.
I would hope it's San Francisco, considering.
Yeah, it should by rights be San Francisco because that's where Starfleet headquarters is. But yeah, it was just please end program and delete. Computer end program 2020.
End it now. Okay, but yeah, that is all we've got time for this week. Our next episode...
Someone has been running, their alternate terrible history 2016 program, and they forgot to switch it off.
Do you know, that might be it. Mm. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, that is all we've got time for this week. Our next episode will be partly a post-mortem of Gish and how well...
And possibly Paul, us.
And us, depending on how we survive.
If we survive,
oh gosh.
Yeah.
Gish.
No, yes,
Gish. Gosh.
Gish, gosh, gosh, Gish. So, yes, that's all we've got time for this week. So, it's good night from.
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blurt. I'm on Twitter, @PaulBlurt.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter @EMKingMA. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can find us on Twitter @NerdsPodcast, and we're on Facebook as the Nerds Assemble Podcast. You can listen to us on Spotify, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Damn it, Sam, you're in Gish. What the hell?
End program.